A disturbing anniversary this weekend, Pamela. 1 year ago, the Charlottesville alt-right rally slash brawl slash later turned into the guy driving his car to a crowd of people and killing one woman. That was 1 year ago.
Yeah, that was when we saw a bunch of people carrying tiki torches.
The Tiki Torch Warriors.
Yeah, on
wearing
campus.
Khakis and polo shirts. Yes. And some people defended their right to do so and say, hey, it's free speech. Other people call things like that hate speech, some of the things they were saying, some of the Nazi propaganda and whatnot. Where is that line, and how do you define it? Well, joining us right now on our KTAR newsmaker line is Dr. Phyllis Gerstenfeld. Dr. Gerstenfeld is a hate crimes expert and a professor at Cal State University Stanislaus. Good morning to you, ma'am.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure having you. So you heard the setup there a little bit, and even I acknowledge that I probably struggle with it. I tend to come down on the side of free speech more, but it seems more and more people are equating hate speech with just speech they don't agree with or speech they don't like. Help us understand where that line is.
Sure. Part of the problem is that hate speech is really very subjective. So for what one person might consider hateful, another person might not. And the courts have made a real distinction between hate crimes and hate speech, which means generally if somebody's actually committing a crime against someone, like punching them or vandalizing or something like that, that can be punished. But if they're just speaking, that's generally protected by the First Amendment, even if what they're saying is pretty hateful.
Mm-hmm. But when we hear about a clear definition of hate speech, yes, it's very subjective. But when we have major corporations like Apple and Facebook and YouTube kicking the likes of Alex Jones off because it goes against their community policy or standards, are we going to start to get, or do you feel as though a clear definition of what it is will surface as we see companies move in that direction?
I think that's going to be a really difficult thing. I think every company, every person has a very different definition. I think we see some general stuff coming from the companies about things that are offensive on the basis of race, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, that kind of thing. But there's still a lot of variation. And because it's private companies doing it rather than the legal system, they can have a lot of variation.
Dr. Phyllis Gerstenfeld, again, joining us, a professor at Cal State University Stanislaus and a hate crimes expert. And again, I agree that hate crimes seem a lot more, a lot easier to define than hate speech. Is the line between free speech and hate speech, I'm going to use the term, it seems to be relatively fluid. And I would say over history, it kind of, does it ebb and does it flow? Where are we at this time in history as to how we look at hate speech?
I think we're in a difficult time because people have a lot of really strong emotions and opinions at this point. And there's maybe more consideration for protecting people, particularly in places like the workplace or in schools. But we are also, of course, concerned about protecting people's rights to express themselves. So I think the tension is greater now than it has been in the past. And I don't know that we're any better at really getting a handle on how to define hate speech and what to do about it without trampling on people's constitutional rights.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about the tension being greater now and that we're in a difficult time and we continue to evolve with this, have you seen an increase or what have you seen, maybe is a better way of positioning this question, Doctor, in the wake of Charlottesville? Again, we're coming up on that one-year anniversary this weekend. We know that the Virginia governor has declared a state of emergency for that anniversary.
Yeah.
Has this topic changed and evolved in the last year, and if so, how?
I think it has changed in that there's a lot more awareness of it. I think there's a lot of people speaking out more openly on both sides, I think, really, about the issue than they would have, and a lot of people who may not have been aware that how much hatefulness there is out there have become aware of it. So I think we're hearing a lot more about it. We're hearing a lot more debate about it. It's becoming more relevant to people's lives.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that people have held, I'll use the term extremist views for quite some time, regardless how you want to define that. There have always been there throughout the course of history and certainly throughout the course of the United States. Is there something unique about today's day and age that, I'll use the term, is it just easier to share those views? Are more people being exposed to hate speech so that this is where this conversation is going?
There are some unique things about today. I don't think people are any more extremist than they have been. I mean, there's a long history of extremism in the United States. But what's made the difference really is the internet and the instant availability of all kinds of speech and the ability to spread your speech to everybody really quickly. And you know, now things used to be, if you wanted to spread that, you had to, you know, print it out and hand out flyers or something like that.
Stand
and
on a street corner with a megaphone or something. Yeah,
exactly. And now you can put it up somewhere on the internet and people all over the world see it within seconds. And so that makes a real difference.
Well, when you talk about the instant availability because of the internet, it then also, I think, gives people who may have that viewpoint a sense that there are others like me that feel the same way. And so does that instant availability then empower individuals to share their viewpoints? Because as you just stated before, Doctor, you don't think that there are more extremist viewpoints out there. We have a long history of that here in the United States.
Yeah.
But are people more empowered because of the instant availability on the internet to say those things?
I think that's a really great point. I think people who might otherwise have been isolated with their viewpoints now feel as if, you know, they're part of a community. And the other people they're talking to may be anywhere in the world, but they're all together, you know, sharing their views and reinforcing one another. Some colleagues and I did some research several years back, and we found a lot of the groups have international ties even. So I think that it does empower people. It normalizes what their beliefs to them and sometimes to other people.